From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
Jim, this is for you. This is Money Talk for April 17th, 2020. Checking the calendar. Nope, there's still nothing happening unless you count your weekly grocery shopping as an outing. Since being closed indefinitely for the COVID virus, a Michigan movie theater now displays on their marquee this twin bill. No close encounters of any kind, and don't stand by me. In an online sermon to parishioners, a Wisconsin minister pointed out that the Last Supper would have been non-compliant by our current quarantine standards. Okay, you explain that to Jesus. And according to my iPhone's activity report, my screen time is up 4,000%, and my car is getting 3 weeks to the gallon. And more good news, I haven't lost my car keys at all in the last 3 weeks. On today's podcast, we have Kyle Tedding, Steve Giles, and with a wrap-up of the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. Good to have you back. Well, for the week overall, we made back a couple of nickels. NASDAQ up 1.4% this week, climbing 118 points to finish the week at 8,650. Meanwhile, in the broader markets, the S&P stock composite 500 added 3%. Nice week for the broader markets, up 84 points to close this afternoon at 2,874. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up 2.2% this week, rising 515 points. Close with the bell this afternoon in New York, with the Dow finishing the week at 24,235. Year-to-date total return, including dividends, the S&P 500 is down 10.5%. Not so bad, making back some of this money. The Dow down 14.5%. You know, Kyle, let's start with some of the economic news that came out pretty ugly this week. Sounds like it's going to get a whole lot uglier. You know, let's work backwards. We had first-time claims for unemployment insurance just in a month hit 22 million. 13% of Americans' workforce filed claims for unemployment insurance. This past reporting period came down a little bit from the 6.6 million the week before, but 5.2 million people filed first-time claims for unemployment, according to the Labor Department. So that's a big number. You take a look at the Commerce Department report, retail sales fell 8.7%. So that's a big number. And the previous record, consider this, right in the middle of the financial crisis, November of 08, retail sales fell 3.9%. That'd been the previous record. So we passed that by twofold. Industrial production, biggest drop since the end of World War II, down 5.4%. And Kyle, as you know, most of the shutdown occurred starting the second half of March, so some of these figures don't reflect all of that. Kyle, I think we're looking forward to a couple of months now of pretty ugly headline economic news.
Yeah, you're spot on there, Bob. You know, I think you look at those unemployment numbers and you go back to April 1st of 2010, and since then the U.S. economy had created 22.5 million jobs. And now in the last couple of weeks, really in the last month, we've destroyed every job that was created since the end of the financial crisis. And so, you know, I think if you look at kind of how bad did it get and then how quickly did we recover, it took us 10 years really to build back up everything that we've lost now in the last 4 weeks. And so, you know, I think employment being kind of the piece that drives the rest of the economy, you know, you're not going to see that data get better for a while, certainly until you know, we get the all clear to send some people back to work. Maybe a little bit of good news in that, you know, companies like Boeing looking to put some workers back to work next week. But again, they're going to do that in phases. They're only going to do it when they think that it's safe, when they can follow the guidelines necessary. You've seen Volkswagen put some people back to work on their lines. But it's a very different work environment than what we've seen in the past. And again, you know, I think for the vast majority of those industries, you know, we're not seeing a lot of new car purchases right now. We're not seeing a lot of people that need to buy new airplanes. And so even as those workers come back on the lines, you know, they're going to be working in a much reduced capacity because ultimately the end demand isn't there for a lot of those big products. And so I think we absolutely are talking about economic news that's not going to get better anytime soon. And I think the question we ask ourselves is how much of that has already been priced in to, you know, how far the market has fallen. How much of that depends on whether we recover, you know, health-wise 3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now. And the truth is that no one really knows the answer to those questions. But we think that at least some of it's priced in. And, you know, I think we can get to a place where we have a better understanding of how long this is going to last. We're just not there yet.
Kyle, as you know, the price of oil historically is a great leading barometer of where we're going. And in spite of the president's efforts to try to strike a deal with the Saudis and the Russians, some of the other OPEC members, didn't work. There's just too much oil out there. Hit $19 a barrel this week. And along with that, the dollar has been very strong, you know, which of course is oil's traded in dollar terms around the world. So the two are interconnected. But it looks like oil's not coming up anytime soon. You look at the cost of gasoline now. We're not driving our cars. But it sure is cheap to fill up your tank.
Yeah, you know, I think Max covered it in the open. We're all getting 3 weeks to the tank right now. And so, you know, I think I'm doing better than that with how much I used to fill up versus what I do now. But, you know, I don't think the typical savings that the average household was going to see from, you know, not spending as much on gas, I don't think that that's a huge concern right now. Those people are going to save that money no matter what price gas is because they're not buying it. And then you look at that deal, which we announced on Sunday, all it really did was take the supply down to meet what, you know, how far demand had fallen. It did nothing for the existing problems of oversupply that were out there. And so, you know, I think every reason to believe that these low oil prices will be here for a while. You know, there's no real driver either on the supply side or the demand side at this point to push oil prices all that much higher. And so, you know, I think you look at, you know, filling your gas tank now for less than $20, and it's been a while since anybody was able to say they could do that. You know, I'm a little younger than many of the others on the podcast here, but it's been since I got my license that you could get gas for less than a dollar a gallon, and we're there now again. You know, the BP by our house is 98 cents a gallon now. Didn't realize that because I'm not out filling, but just looked before the podcast to see, and sure enough, that's what they're selling it for right now. And so, you know, it's been 15, 20 years since we've seen that. And here we are back to that simply because of this huge oversupply and such a significant drop in demand.
So Kyle, Max, and I remember 35 cents a gallon for gasoline. That's how long we've been around. Steve, let's bring you onto the show. You know, you and I get asked probably every hour of every day, Steve, Monday through Friday, have we hit bottom? Is this the real recovery? Will we retest the lows? What are you telling folks these days, Steve?
You know, Bob, that's a great question. And it is certainly one that we get asked a lot by clients. And I have to remind them that we're so early in the stages of this pandemic that it's really hard to tell. But if the economic indicators are of any guidance, you look at valuations right now on the S&P 500, you've got a forward PE ratio that's still 18.5. That's well above the 10-year average of only 15. I think we're going to see a testing of the lows we had earlier on last month. I think that this recovery is going to be more W-shaped as we continue to sort of filter into the economic data of what's going to happen as we see earnings numbers this month. Keep in mind that it's really only capturing the last half of March where the economy started to get shut down. If we continue for another couple of months for the entire second quarter, you know, all these unemployment numbers are just going to balloon. All the retail sales numbers are just going to balloon. And I think investors, as well as consumers, need to recognize that we're going to be in this for the long haul.
Steve, what are you telling people that either want to sell or want to buy right now?
I'm reminding them that if they entered into this downturn with the right mix, that the mix is doing exactly what it was intended to do. Their balanced portfolios in the 60-40, 50-50 range are providing them certainly with downside protection. So the volatility has been much less. Those investors that have withdrawal requirements to meet their cash flow needs to supplement things like social securities and pensions certainly don't have to be forced to sell their stocks because we've got enough money set aside in the cash and equivalents and fixed income side to continue sending out those monthly distributions. I think now's the time to just be patient. for those investors that maybe have money on the sidelines and want to commit some dollars, tiptoeing rather than committing everything you've got, knowing that we may test the lows that we saw last month, knowing that this is going to be drawn out. Keep in mind that no matter what you do now or in the next 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, I think looking back in 5 years, we'll be glad that we held the course and stayed patient and stayed with our balanced allocations.
Well, and Steve, such an interesting point there. And I think, you know, we heard from Berkshire Hathaway's Charlie Munger today talking about how, you know, in the financial crisis, they were out there left and right snapping up deals, and they're not doing that right now. They're concerned about the uncertainty, not concerned that, you know, we're not going to get to the end of this, but concerned about how long it might take and concerned about how much worse things might get. Certainly, there is potential for things to get worse. And so I think you look at, you know, some of the biggest value shoppers out there. Typically, Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger at Berkshire are all over the deals, and they're holding off. They'd rather have liquidity right now. They think that there could be better deals to come. And then the flip side of that is, what's the average investor doing? And, you know, I think the average investor, for the most part, has been sitting on their hands. They've been doing the right things. You look at Morningstar's data on fund flows. What we've seen is that there's a lot of money coming out of long-term corporate bonds, bonds more broadly, but actually stock funds have seen net inflows. And so, you know, when you look at, okay, what are investors doing right now? They're either kind of sitting around and waiting to see what happens, or if they were properly positioned, they might be just taking advantage of a couple of deals here and there. But ultimately, you don't see a lot of people, you know, going all in one way, going all out the other. I think for the most part, investors have understood we were well positioned for this. We had balance, and that balance is doing what it's supposed to be doing. And so, yeah, maybe we take down an opportunity here or there, but for the most part, we want to let this ride.
And even if we do wait, Kyle, for the markets to sort themselves out, I don't think anyone's going to miss that 50% up day that gets us back to where we were in February. That just doesn't happen. Obviously, people were somewhat shell-shocked by the velocity of the downside here. I mean, we saw it just in a few short weeks. The market give up what it took almost a year and a half of the financial crisis. So that led to some of the panic selling and some of the velocity of the trading that we had. But moving forward, for those investors that do want to maybe commit some dollars longer term, Bob, I think being patient, nibbling a little bit here and there is okay. But for the most part, hey, let your balance work the way it was designed. Those balanced portfolios are holding up quite well this year.
You know, you have to be impressed with the stock market as a future pricing mechanism. Thanks to Joel Drusian for providing the latest information from FactSet on corporate earnings. But their latest estimate for this calendar year for earnings to fall 12.3%. So I marvel at how that's almost right in the middle of the range between what the Dow has lost and what the broader markets, the S&P, has lost so far this year. So it's almost a parallel in terms of a decline in stock prices vis-a-vis a decline in profits. You know, I think the essence of trying to get our arms around the economy now is, you know, how does the consumer bounce back? And, you know, I've got all sorts of worries here. And I don't know how long it's going to take to unwind them. Take a look at real estate as an example. We know nationwide 30% of tenants, people that rent, didn't pay rent April 1st. So that's a big number. A lot of those landlords borrow money to fund their property purchases, and they're going to be struggling with those payments. And that's not going to come back anytime soon. With a whole lot of families, almost half the country living paycheck to paycheck, month to month, they're not going to have the ability to pay back the landlord. They're barely making the rent payment each month. Let's talk about small businesses here. That outlook's fairly bleak. They think only 37% of all small businesses in the United States can survive 4 months without earnings. So what we're talking about here is almost two-thirds of all small business in the country won't survive if this shutdown, you know, we're already into the end of our fifth week here. So we're going to the end of May here in Wisconsin. And as a result, you can see all sorts of small businesses that historically are poorly capitalized just throwing the towel. And Kyle, you know, this is the time to bring out what you and I have discussed over the years, the paradox of thrift. Good news is short term, you want people to spend money. And now I think a lot of people are going to be encouraged to save money. And so when a lot of people eventually get back to work, I have a hard time understanding how that's going to translate immediately into stronger consumer spending. I think a whole lot of people are going to try to do whatever it takes to save money so that they don't go without some kind of cushion.
Yeah, you know, Bob, I think you look at kind of where we were prior to when all this started. And, you know, I've said on the podcast for years that we'd reached kind of the level of peak stuff, that unless you were building a new home, unless you were moving out of your parents' house and starting your own life somewhere, you didn't need new furniture. You didn't need a new TV. You didn't need, you know, a new kitchen table. And I think, you know, we still had some people who were living paycheck to paycheck, who spent every dollar they had, who weren't saving. I think all of a sudden, when those people are able to get back to work, you are 100% correct. What they want to know is, when this happens again 6 months from now, because we thought we had the virus under control and it turns out we didn't, you know, how are we gonna get through another 6 weeks of quarantine? How are we gonna get through another 6 weeks of physical distancing? And if it means that you know, they live the same way they've lived for the last 6 weeks, you know, not spending on anything but food and, you know, maybe rent. That's what it is. It might mean that they go for a while without any of the, you know, any of the creature comforts that they were living with prior to. And for many of those people, it probably wasn't much to begin with, because again, there are a lot of people in this country still living paycheck to paycheck. But I think longer term, and again, this is the difference between thinking out the next 1 to 3 years and the next 7 to 10 years. Longer term, thrift is a great thing. Longer term, it means that those people are better able to retire. It means that those people are better able to afford things down the road. It means that we can, I think, have an economy that's more sustainable, because right now, our country is borrowing against the future. Right now, our country is doing what it can to get by for a while. But eventually, it's that thrift that will help us, you know, long term, be able to afford those things. And so, you know, it's a constant need of trying to balance between what do we spend today to make sure that we have what we need, to make sure that we can get people through this crisis, and what do we save for tomorrow? What do we save for the future? And, you know, I think right now the critical thing is spend what you have to spend to get out of this. And then longer term, you worry about things like thrift and what it means for stocks and what it means for the economy.
Steve, let's bring you back in. I have a question about technical indicators. Steve, you and I historically don't pay close attention to technical indicators. I don't think they're all that accurate. I think it's financial entertainment for a lot of people. But the technical indicators aren't good right now. We're way below 200-day moving averages. We're way below the 50-day averages. And it theoretically points to problems coming up here in the markets. What's your take on that?
Well, you're absolutely right, Bob. We're so early on in this economic dilemma that we don't have all the data points yet. I think it's important for investors to remember that the earnings numbers we're starting to see are, again, only reflecting a couple of weeks at the end of March when the economy was shut down. And even as we move through this second quarter, while some people may be the doom and gloomers, keep in mind that there are some industries, and this is where I'm kind of an eternal optimist, there are some industries like ours that are continuing to plug along. Financial services, banks and whatnot are an essential industry, and we're still working. I've been sitting here in my home office looking out my window at my neighbor's chimney getting rebuilt. So there are certainly some people that are working, and that might not be captured the way that we would expect it to right now. Obviously, those technical indicators maybe aren't accurate enough to surgically figure out what sectors of the economy are still working versus what ones aren't. You know, airline industries are getting hit hard, where other industries might be able to muster on.
You know, Steve, I think such a critical piece, you talk about that chimney being built, and, you know, that gets counted in fundamental data. That gets counted in what the activity of our economy. The technical indicators, they don't capture any of that you know, the activity that's going on around us, they simply look at, okay, what does the price of the market tell us? What is the price of an option on the market tell us? What are people willing to pay for volatility options or those kinds of, you know, again, very technical things. And that's great data for traders. That's great data for people that care, what's the potential for this to go up or down a certain percent over the next 30 days? And again, I think there's lots of traders out there. There's lots of people who care about that information. I think what we care about more is the exact stuff you're talking about. It's the fundamentals of how the economy functions. It's the fundamentals of whether or not businesses are making money. And ultimately, investors, not traders, but investors, people who care about where does this go long-term, investors are caring about the fundamental data, not about whether or not the 200 days cross below the 50-day, not about whether the, you know, stochastics of the market show this particular thing is going to happen next. Yeah, sometimes they're accurate. Sometimes they are meaningful. But long-term, what matters is fundamentals. And I think, you know, that's where we can differentiate ourselves as investors is to say, yes, okay, we understand that sometimes that matters. But if we have a view that's broader than the next 30 days, you know, ultimately that stuff's all going to pan itself out and we'll get to what really matters, which is fundamentals.
I got to say that it's been encouraging to see the market come back the last couple of weeks. Last week, of course, best week for the market since 1974. Had a nice increase this week. So I'm going to take that as a pretty encouraging sign that potentially we've seen the bottom. Hard to tell. That's why I needed to talk about the technical indicators that say that maybe we haven't hit bottom yet. But I think we haven't. We're going to get pretty close here. And one of these days, they're going to come out and say that, oh, we got the vaccine. One of these days, they're going to come out and say, well, we got enough antibody tests for everybody, and we're going to start nationwide testing. And they'll eventually open up society. So you see how this is all going to play out. We just don't know the when of it yet. Well, folks, this is the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for joining our program. We enjoyed doing the show. Everybody stay safe, stay home. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.